In the 90s, it became very popular for scientists to begin to investigate what is called the C word. Previous to that time, the C word was a word that should be hushed and not spoken above, a whisper in academic surroundings. The C word is consciousness. And two very well-known scientists, Sir Francis Crick and an associate of his called Michison, began to do some research on the functions of dream sleep. Crick and Michison began to wonder about what dreams meant. And what they had found, as had been well known by others before them, is that when you're dreaming, your eyes move back and forth. It's called rapid eye movement. And your eyes seem to be scanning around as if you were actually looking at scenery. In other words, as far as your eyes are concerned, or as far as the mechanism which is controlling your eyes is concerned, you're not having a dream. You're looking at the surrounding territory as you would in normal waking life. And what they tried to figure out is why we dream. And they came to a very remarkable conclusion. They said that we dream, specifically have these REM dreams, in order to remove certain undesirable modes of interaction in the network of cells in the cortex. This they call reverse learning. In other words, what we do when we dream is we dream to forget. And that seems like a rather strange claim to make. We dream in order to forget. In fact, when people quoted them on that, they said that that slogan should not be a mnemonic for their reverse learning hypothesis. They were looking at for dreams as a learning mechanism. And I kind of think I like that idea, that dreams are ways in which we learn. A number of researchers have found that. Jonathan Winson had been doing some experiments in New York City on dreams, but not dreams of human beings, dreams of rats. And he came to the conclusion that rats dream in order to reconstruct pathways to places where food might be hidden, pathways that they had investigated in waking life just before they went to sleep, where they actually had discovered these foods hidden and then went to sleep so that when they woke up the next morning, they would know how to find the food again. So this is intriguing to me, that dreams have a way of teaching us things. Well, this is very interesting, but researchers began to wonder, is it really true? And could they find a way to mechanically reproduce that? Three scientists, Hopfield, Feinstein, and Palmer, actually began to look at unlearning as a stabilizing effect in collective memories. They did this by making a computer model of an interconnection of neurons. They were using a computer analog of neuronal connections. And so they modeled this with a computer program, which exhibited, at least mathematically anyway, what would happen in what we call associative memory. And they were working with things called cells, and they were working with these cells being hooked up in some kind of computer program. Well, the model consists of units, which can take on values of, say, 0 or 1 or minus 1 through 1, and an imagination of, or an imagined matrix of, like, wires connecting these cells, and the cells communicate to each other. So if one cell changes, it sends a pulse down the line to another cell, and if that pulse is received, then the cell receiving it would change or not, depending upon the kind of signal it got from the previous cell. And so they imagined that these cells were all linked by, imagine wires, and they imagined that the wire could be thick or thin. They called that the strength of the connection between the different cells. And they said, let's imagine that we can modify the strength between these cells by processes that we input into the computer program, so that we can actually change these strengths. And they call these changing strengths weights. In other words, if something was heavily weighted, It had a strong signal between the two cells. If it was lightly weighted, it had a weak signal between the two cells. So they had various weights that they could input. Now, what they did is they began to input various kinds of, let's say, patterns. And with a pattern, they would input a certain pattern, and they would input a certain program of strengths and weaknesses. So some cells were very strongly connected, and some were very weakly connected. And then they would leave it alone. And then they would input not the whole pattern that they just inputted, but a piece of the pattern, and try to see if the computer memory would reconstruct from that little input the whole pattern that was there before. And lo and behold, it did. So then they would try another pattern and input a whole different set of strengths for that pattern. And then another one, and then another one, and then another one. Finally, they would have a whole flock of memories in there. But then as they began to input different little pieces, the computer memory started to go a bit wacky. What it began to do was one of three things. It would either fantasize, become obsessive, or it would start to hallucinate. Now, this is really getting weird. This is what interested me. Not that they were able to reproduce the patterns that had been inputted, but the fact that they could cause their computer brain to undergo these rather strange behavioral patterns. Let me talk about fantasies first. One of their behavioral patterns was that you feed in a small part of the pattern, expecting the network to reproduce the correct total pattern, and instead, the computer fills in the blanks with entirely different patterns. In a typical joke, the analyst asks his patient what a chocolate cake reminds him of, and the patient answers sex. Then the analyst asks him what a fly swatter reminds him of, and the patient responds, the moon. So what they found out is then when these neural networks were overloaded with too many associations, then what would happen is that the overloaded brain, quote-unquote brain, would begin to associate anything with anything. You give it a pattern which should normally have induced, let's say, a remembrance of, say, the color orange, and it would start remembering chocolate cake or something like that. I'm using equivalences here because what we're talking about is that the patterns that got produced were not the patterns that should have been produced by the inputs that were given to the network. There was another bizarre behavioral pattern that occurred, and this was really funny. No matter what input they fed to their computer network, it always responded with the same output. I would call that obsession. It's like the joke in which the son calls his obsessive mother on the phone and asks, how are you? And the mother turns this into her obsession. You don't love me because you never call your mother. It wouldn't matter what the son had said at the beginning of the conversation, the obsessive mother would turn to the same response regardless. So these researchers, Hopfield and his associates, jokingly referred to this as the 50% of all stimuli remind me of sex problem, meaning that when their nets were overloaded, 50% of all inputs resulted in the same output. No matter what you tell an obsessive person, he or she comes to the same conclusion, usually a negative one. You say, isn't the weather fine? And an obsessive person says, yeah, it's fine, but it's going to rain tomorrow. I can feel the rain coming. And then you say, isn't the weather terrible? Yeah, it's going to rain tomorrow. And then you say, you know, I'm hungry. Yeah, but if we walk outside, we're going to get caught in the rain tomorrow. And on it goes. Obsession. Finally, the third one, which is also one that took place, was that sometimes they would hook in a particular input and the net would begin to hallucinate. In fact, sometimes they wouldn't put any input in and it would begin to create patterns. In other words, left to its own device, these computers began to dream.